Good morning, Connecticut, to our friends across the Sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open celebrating the 69th annual Barnum Festival happening over the next few weeks in Bridgeport by chatting with the Barnum Festival's official spokesman and ringmaster, Terry O'Connor, to find out why all of Connecticut and our friends on Long Island should come out or over to the Park City and party. Then we'll head to Hartford to get down to business with the director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. We're going to learn why virtually all of the state's cities and towns are circling their wagons as the legislature continues dealing with one of the worst state budget crises in recent history. And we'll wrap up introducing you to Kids for Kids, established to inspire kids to change the world by using their creativity, energy, and imagination to find ways to fund and fulfill other kids' dreams. We're going to hear about the group's first walkathon at Norwalk High School coming up on June 10th, followed by a benefit concert that evening on the Fairfield Green. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. Atlantic hurricane season has begun, and it's always important to have preparations in place should any severe weather potentially impact the region, with the principal threat period for Connecticut happening from mid-August to mid-October. Connecticut residents are also encouraged to download the state's Emergency Preparedness app for smartphones and tablet devices. The app is available free of charge, and you could download it from the Apple iTunes Store and the Google Play Store by searching CT Prepares.
Always a pleasure to visit with old and dear friends, especially when we're honoring them. And that is the purpose of our visit today to the Cardinal Sheehan Center and my sit down with my good and dear friend, Terry O'Connor. The annual Barnum Festival, as you may know, is in season here in Bridgeport and the surrounding towns, including Monroe, Trumbull, Easton, Shelton, Stratford, and Fairfield. But the Barnum Festival would love to see all of Connecticut coming down here to Bridgeport. Dating back to 1948, the festival originated to help support local businesses and honor P.T. Barnum, a world-renowned showman and city leader. And as many folks have probably seen on the news, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus is no more. So really, one of the few ways that you can still touch the Barnum legacy is coming right down here to Bridgeport and perhaps getting your hands on the cloak of Terry O'Connor, who is the ringmaster for today's event. Terry is executive director of both the Cardinal Sheehan Center and McGivney Community Centers, which we've both visited over the years. Terry dedicates his time to enriching the lives of local youth and helping to meet their educational, recreational, and social needs. In fact, a life-saving and life-changing mission, which I've witnessed through many generations of the folks that Terry and his people have touched. So, Terry, as I said when I called you to schedule this interview, who did you kick in the shins to get this job?
Well, you know, John, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on your show. Yeah. It always is. And, you know, it's a great honor to be the ringmaster. I'm the 69th ringmaster in the history of the Barnum Festival. And ironically, the gentleman who ran Bridgeport Brass Company started the Barnum Festival. And here it is, 69 years later, and the Sheehan Center was the Bridgeport Brass Company's building.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, it was started in 1882 as an armory by the state, but the brass company took it over. Okay. And when they went belly up, they gave the building to the diocese, and the Sheehan Center opened July 28, 1962. Okay. So kind of come full circle with the brass company and the Barnum Festival, and here I am as the 2017 ringmaster.
So the connection seems to run a little deeper than the O'Connor legacy.
Absolutely. It has nothing to do with O'Connor. It has to do with the Sheehan Center and the brass company. But as I mentioned, it's a great honor. I'm following a lot of great ringmasters in the past. David D'Addario has been a super supporter of the Sheehan Center over the years. Mike Niedermeyer, one of my former board presidents. Mike Besigla used to be on my board as well. Mm. Yeah, George Santa, who was president of my board. The list goes on and on of people who have been involved with the Sheehan Center in some way or another. and have been obviously ringmasters and been involved with the Barnum Festival over the years.
So you, some time ago, you received your whistle and whip and your garb for the year. This all started, what, about 6-8 weeks ago?
Well, it actually started November 30th when they had Meet the Ringmaster, where I was sort of announced to the public at Testo's. That's the annual coming out party for every ringmaster. And we had about 300 people at Testo's. Great dinner provided by Testo's, thanks to their support. And then during the course of the January, February, March, April, we had some fundraising events. We had a basketball doubleheader here at the center between the Fairfield Police and Fire Departments and Bridgeport Police and Fire. And Bridgeport won both, I must say. So hats off to both our Fire and Bridgeport Police Departments for that. We had a comedy night at the Bijou Theater, which was a great success. And now... we had a pub crawl last week, which was about 100 people coming out to support the festival. So we had a number of fundraisers. And now coming up, you get some more things that we're giving back to the community. On Tuesday night, or Tuesday afternoon, I should say, we're having our senior dance down at Captain's Cove.
Right.
And that's a great opportunity for seniors who can physically get out of some of the senior residents in the community to come down. We have a DJ. It's going to be a beautiful night, guaranteed sunshine, and enjoy Captain's Cove and a DJ and dancing. My whole royal family will be there to entertain with the seniors.
Well, the Barnum Festival, the great thing about it, as we invite all of Connecticut to come to Bridgeport or come back to Bridgeport to experience all the incredible things here, maybe come for the Barnum Festival and plot out some other day trips or even weekend stays, because there's museums and parks and beaches and the zoo, so much to do here, maybe take in a game at the arena or some sort of activity. There's all kinds of things going on. And it's all to kind of build community spirit and foster philanthropy and celebrate the many diverse cultures represented by the residents here. Dozens of those cultures are represented in the individuals who attend both here in McGivney.
Absolutely. You know, the Sheehan Center and McGivney Center have been stables. Sheehan Center will be 55 years in July. McGivney, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary for the McGivney Center. But one of the things I've done a little differently this year is I've involved more than nonprofits involved. In fact, I'm giving out scholarships to the Cardinal Sheehan Center, the McGivney Center, Rafaela Taylor Center, Whole Neighborhood House, and the Burroughs Community Center, $2,000 scholarships that they can use to apply for youngsters who can't afford to come to their summer day camps. We're also having about 7 or 8, maybe even 9 of the nonprofits have floats in the great street parade, the Kennedy Center, St. V Special Needs Center, the Klein After School Program, along with Sheehan, McGivney, Rafaela Taylor, and Hall, and so forth. All are going to have floats in the great street parade, which is the 25th of June. That sort of ends the Barnum Festival, but in between now and then, the senior dance, as I mentioned, the 6th, and then on the 10th, we have the Touch a Truck, which actually is a repeat because we got rained out a couple Saturdays ago. It poured, if you remember, a couple Saturdays ago. Well, so we're having a June 10th Touch a Truck from noon to 4 o'clock at Andrew Ward High School over in Fairfield. We're going to have 30-odd trucks of all kinds, fire trucks, police trucks, army vehicles, command units from the police department, anything that youngsters want to climb on, climb aboard, blow the horns, have fun. We're going to have food available. And it's, again, from noon to 4 o'clock at Andrew Ward. Then the following Saturday, the 17th, is the Wingding Parade, which is always a big hit for the little ones. They dress up in costumes. They can have their own mini floats. They have judging. All of that begins at 9 o'clock in the morning with registration, and then 12 o'clock the judging, and then they get to spend the whole afternoon in the zoo for free with their family, which is a great opportunity for them.
And that's a long day for you because it ends with the ball.
Well, and Saturday night with the ball, and my theme as ringmaster is celebrating youth. So we're having the ball at the Fairchild Wheeler Interdistrict Magnet High School, so which kind of goes along with youth, obviously. And that's the 17th. And then the following Saturday is Barnum Palooza down at Seaside Park. That starts at 11 o'clock, runs right up to about 5 o'clock or so with food trucks, rides for the kids, bands, entertainment, and then some special entertainment from about 5 to 7, and then about 7:45, the symphony performed, and then at dusk, 9:15-ish, whatever, the fireworks go off. And then, as I already mentioned, on Sunday, it's a great street parade, and that winds up the 17th edition of the Barnum Festival.
Well, part of the Barnum legacy was, of course, you know, he had the famous museum, but he also was the founder of the Ringling Brothers and the Barnum & Bailey Circuses, which then took a lot of that excitement out and traveled around the country and the world. world. Another part of the Barnum Festival and your responsibilities are the Barnum Roadshow. What's that all about?
Well, the roadshow begins on the 15th of June, and over 3 days, the 15th, the 19th, and the 21st, we're going to visit homes in Bridgeport, Fairfield, Trumbull, Monroe, Shelton, and Milford. About 22 or so different homes, St. Joe's Manor in Trumbull, for example. And we bring the royal family, a jazz band, musicians, into those homes and visit and entertain the seniors that are homebound, not homebound, but live in residences.
Right, sure.
And they look forward to it. Every ringmaster I've talked to said it's one of the highlights of it. And it's kind of a quiet secret of the Barnum Festival because people see the Barnum Palooza, the fireworks, the symphony, the Wingding Parade and so forth, but they don't see the senior dance. They don't see the roadshow because it's not something that's for the general public, but it's a huge piece of what the Barnum Festival does every year to bring some joy, excitement, enthusiasm to folks that are live in residences, and then the seniors that are available can get out and come down to Captain's Cove.
Hmm. And we can't really forget what opportunity the Barnum Festival and all these events, large and small, do for the greater Bridgeport area, not just the destination sites like the Science Museum and the zoo and the arena and the ballpark, of course. But this festival has traditionally been, was in fact started to help boost knowledge of Bridgeport and the many businesses and entrepreneurs that call this their base. How do you see this year's Barnum Festival as, you know, the natural progression or even taking it to the next level? Do you think or do you know that a lot of different and new businesses, as well as long-time traditional businesses, are going to be exposed or revealed to visitors?
Well, I think it's hard. Businesses today are hurt by the economy. People, if they have a job, they might be doing a job and a half. They don't have as much free time. I think that we need to continue to do a better job of exposing the festival to businesses because some of the businesses, I think, look at it as well as a parade and it's fireworks. That's great. But what else does it do? And I think the fact that this year we've done the $10,000 in scholarships, we've gone back to 3 days of the roadshow as opposed to 2 days to the roadshow. And we've tried to expose businesses and the whole general community to what the festival is about. And it's not easy because businesses are under the gun. You look in the papers, obviously everybody knows GE left. Aetna now is threatening to leave the state of Connecticut. So businesses are really focused on their bottom line, which you can't blame them. And so nonprofits in general, and the Barnum Festival is a 501c3 nonprofit, just as Sheen, McGivney, Hall, everybody else. Trying to raise money is not an easy thing anymore, John.
And ultimately, P.T. Barnum himself, this city celebrates it. There's the Barnum Museum and many places where you travel around the downtown, you can see and visit sites that Barnum himself touched. The Barnum Festival is promoting his legacy, but the Ringmaster also kind of plays a role, as the Ringmaster did in the Barnum and Barnum and Bailey Circus and the Ringling Brothers Circuses. Based on what you know about P.T. Barnum, Terry O'Connor, what are a couple of the personality attributes that you think you might share with the greatest ringmaster of all?
Well, he was a fundraiser. And I've been doing that for a few years. And so I think he enjoyed being in the public eye. And I think that the ringmasters have to do that. I will be a trivia question because I'll be the last ringmaster because the circus was here in November. And they turned all the lights out. And I had the opportunity to take that microphone and stand right in the middle of the circus floor at the arena and introduce the circus. And now, as you mentioned earlier, it's no longer. It just ended on Long Island a couple weeks ago, which is sad. But when they lost the animals, that was the beginning of the downfall of the circus. Not them, but people just didn't go as much because kids want to see the animals.
Sure.
So I think that the fundraising aspect is there, the showmanship, the being out in the community. I think I've tried to expand, again, the police and fire departments, the basketball game. I've already had the chief say, let's do that next year. We'll do it in Fairfield. Let's get two gyms and expand it. Let's get Stratford Police and Fire versus, let's say, Trumbull Police and Fire and Bridgeport and expand that. get more people involved in it. We had a comedy night, as I mentioned, earlier this year. Eric Lemlin, who works at People's United Bank, volunteered his services as a comic, got five of his buddies from New York to come up, did the entire comedy night for free for the Barnum Festival. Nice. So I think there's ways for the Ringmaster to engage more of the community. Again, we're having probably 8 or 9 community centers have floats. That's never happened before in the parade either. Mm. And the more kids you get in the parade, the more grandparents, aunts, and uncles are coming to see their kids in the parade.
Yeah, and the more fun it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then when the term of ringmastership ends, you know, I don't need to remind you, Barnum also was an elected legislator. So I think that's something that's missing from your resume. Maybe that's something to look out for next November.
That's not going to happen, John. I am not running for any kind of office.
Hunter for governor. Got a nice ring to
it. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Believe me. I'm going to take a lot of deep breaths. I'm going to play a lot more golf come July and August. But it's every ringmaster has said to me, it's one of the best times of your life. You're not sure you'd sign up to do it again because it's a tremendous amount of work that goes with it. But it's a great honor to start with, and it's a pleasure. I have a tremendous royal family. The youngsters I have just been super. Their parents are very much involved with it as well. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything.
Excellent. Terry O'Connor, the 2017, the 69th ringmaster for the annual Barnum Festival, the seasonal celebration of Bridgeport, P.T. Barnum, and the surrounding communities of Monroe, Trumbull, Easton, Shelton, Stratford, and Fairfield. They all invite everyone within the sound of my voice. And all you folks out on Long Island, take the ferry over or take the drive and come on down to Bridgeport and see some of the great things going on here and in the region. This festival dates back to 1948, and we want to remind you on June 10th, it's the big Touch-A-Truck event. On the 15th, the Barnum Road Show commences. On the 17th, in the morning, it's the Wingding Parade and then the Ringmaster's Ball in the evening. The 24th is the big Barnum Palooza, including the Bridgeport Symphony and a gala fireworks display at Seaside Park and the Great Street Parade, wrapping it all up on June 25th. Imagine, Inspire, and Enjoy is the theme of the Barnum Festival, celebrating youth in honor of Terry O'Connor, the ringmaster. And if you missed any or all of that, you can recap at barnumfestival.com. Terry, congratulations. Thank you very much.
John, thank you. As I said, it's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, we usually try to touch base with the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities at least once or twice a year. And obviously, if you are following the news out of Hartford this year, and this interview maybe more than ever, is the right chat at the right time. We're pleased to have in studio with us Joe DeLong. He is the director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, which is the state's largest nonpartisan organization of municipal leaders representing towns and cities of all sizes from all corners of the state, actually 164 member municipalities out of the 169 here in the state. They also interact with a small towns, small communities initiative. I guess it's sort of like one of those things where you're standing there, you're the weather forecaster, you're looking at the cliche of the perfect storm, and it's days away or hours away or minutes away, unlike weather radar, some things can come flying at you pretty quickly with only a moment's notice sometimes, which adds to the excitement or frustration. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about, the program is probably not going to air for a week. A lot can happen, but let's talk about what we know about what's going on today in terms of the Connecticut budget and the biggest concerns for CCM right now.
Well, we know, we're looking at about a $2.2 billion budget deficit over the next couple of years, which is certainly a large challenge for the state of Connecticut. But that deficit could continue to grow beyond that if things aren't done, probably some difficult but major structural changes aren't made over these next few weeks or a couple months as the General Assembly tries to tackle these issues. And I think one of the greatest concerns that CCM has or that our member communities have is that we'll continue down this path of just trying to balance a budget for this year or just trying to figure out a way to plug the holes. And we can't do that. Or you and I will be back here next year having the same conversation. Mm-hmm. Only it'll be a little worse than what it is now.
Yeah.
Until the point that we've buried ourselves so deeply that we simply can't get out from under it. So mm-hmm. I think that the that right now we are, you know, entering into or officially into a crisis mode. But I'm also a big believer, and I think that our municipal leaders from all across Connecticut are big believers, that out of crisis can come opportunity, or out mm-hmm. of every challenge there's opportunity. And we just hope that our state leaders will seize these opportunities in the weeks ahead to really stop worrying about the next election in a couple of years and start really focusing on the next generation and the Connecticut that we want Connecticut to be 5 years from now and 10 years from now.
What's interesting is back in the earlier part of the year when the governor first unveiled his budget ideas, prospect of his political future was still in limbo. We didn't know if he was going to somehow make a comeback and try to run for another term, or if he wasn't. At the time, there was talk about maybe he'd be part of a Clinton administration, but things
sure
don't go the way we plan sometimes. And now we have this kind of interesting situation where we have many lawmakers in Connecticut's legislature who do have designs on a future career serving the people of Connecticut, while Governor Malloy has essentially indicated while he will still work fervently on behalf of the people of Connecticut until his last day in office, that last day is marked clearly in red on a calendar somewhere.
Yeah, you know, one of the things interesting about that, too, I see a lot of these people who do have political aspirations, but so few of them have really showed a willingness to lead. And that's one of the things that's probably the most disconcerting at this point of the process is, you know, we sometimes, I think, I have a tendency to say we, and I apologize for that, but I used to be a state official myself. Okay. And we tend sometimes to not give the electorate the credit for the amount of intelligence that they really do have. Mm-hmm. And you get these advisors around politicians that say, well, if you want to win or if you want to get the Republican nomination, you want to get the Democratic nomination, you can't say this or you can't say that or stay away from this issue. And I personally believe that the state and the citizens of this state right now are really, really looking for leaders. I think the first person who gets out in front of this thing and starts talking about really tough decisions and not just things that are populist statements to their base, because right now we have a lot of people running for governor, want to run for governor, that are really speaking to their base, trying to grab that base of support so they can get the nomination. But I think the time is really ripe for somebody to stand up and really lead and say some things that are perhaps unpopular but necessary. And I believe the electorate's ready for that. I think that people are frustrated with this process and are really tired of the partisanship that's been taking place at the State House. And, you know, that's where I can brag a little bit about the organization that I represent is, you know, we bring together Democrats and Republicans, town managers, independents. We bring together urban centers and suburban communities and rural areas. And we put them all in a room together and they get along and they go through very difficult processes and they come up with recommendations that they know will lift up the entire state of Connecticut. Mm. And a lot of that involves setting their political ideologies aside and doing some give and take. And we really need the General Assembly to take that approach over these next few weeks. And if they will, I think we're going to be a better state for it. If they don't, then again, we're going to be having some of these same conversations and there's going to be a whole lot more pain involved, moving ahead. So hopefully that, that there is some opportunity and there's some good things that take place over these next few weeks.
Well, that being said, Joe, my interest would be in being a fly on the wall in that room because those individuals, those leaders and those citizens are leaders of communities that are used to some degree of a pipeline of return of revenue coming back to their constituents from the state, and that's all on the table now. You have citizens who have maybe for generations been getting some sort of benefits and subsidies and support and services that are now not just up for consideration, but at least in terms of the Malloy proposal, are already off the chopping block and into the shredder.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously going to be some difficult times for a lot of people. But the important thing is that we don't – one of the challenges with some of the early governor's proposals – and let me say this. I think it's very popular right now for people involved in the political arena to attack the governor. His popularity is not that high. He's put forth some very controversial type of proposals. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think we have to recognize that these aren't all problems that the governor created. And to some degree, sure, even if you don't like his proposals, and I'll be the first to say I don't agree with a lot of the governor's proposals, but I do give him credit for being the adult in the room saying we have to address this, where some other people are kind of dancing around the edges and not really addressing it. Mm. I don't like the way the governor's addressing it, but I give him credit for at least, you know, saying, you know, I'm going to put it out there how bad this really is, and I'm going to force people to come to the table and to legislate and to govern and to do tough things. So, you know, with that being said, you know, to me, the biggest concern that I have within those proposals, and it's not just the governor, the General Assembly tends to do this and has a history of doing this. We have people who want to shift the state's burden to the municipal level, or the cost of the state's burden to the municipal level, and get out of town and say that, well, we fixed the problem, and by the way, we did it without increasing taxes. Where in reality, what they really did was they shifted the state's burden into the property tax, which is probably, definitely the absolute worst place that you could put it in Connecticut right now. Not because the property tax is a horrible tax. You know, everybody can make a case by one tax is good or bad or worse than another. But the problem is we are so overly reliant on the property tax, and it's become so non-competitive in the state of Connecticut that there's really no more capacity to put in it without it just exploding, and you can't have any, you know, at that point you have no home ownership. At a certain point you have no new businesses, particularly small businesses that are willing to open their doors. So anything that takes the burden of the state and instead of addressing those burdens just shifts it downhill and puts it into the local property tax is going to have a devastating impact going forward. And so that's one of the things that we've been trying to promote as cities and towns across the state. We're not saying fix the problems, but we don't want to be a part of that. We're more than willing to be a part of that. I think that a lot of the recommendations we've put forth have been difficult recommendations even for some of our members. But there's a recognition that, A, we have to all be in this together, but B, we have to change our structure in order to survive going forward. And just shifting our problems around without changing the structure is not the right solution for Connecticut's problems.
Great. Well, we've gotten to a great point to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk with Joe DeLong, who's the director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. We've sort of led up to a logical point where we can talk about some ideas and some solutions, and those solutions are inherent in the CCM's new report entitled Securing the Future Service Sharing and Revenue Diversification for Connecticut Municipalities, which you can check out on their website, ccm-ct.org. We'll be talking about some of the recommendations in that report right after we get back. So stick with us for Joe DeLong from CCM. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Soupstock Music and Arts Festival is happening Saturday, June 10th and Sunday, June 11th at Veterans Park in Shelton. This independent music and arts festival is for all ages, and it features live music, a vendor village with over 30 handmade artisans and nonprofit organizations, a kids zone welcoming One World Puppetry and Creation Song Project, as well as an annual pro-am soup and chili cook-off. Proceeds benefit the Mary A. Schmecker Turtle Shell Fund, furthering art, craft, and music education for children and young adults. Come on out or get more information and purchase tickets at soupstockfestival.org. We're back with Joe DeLong. He is the director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. If you've joined us in process, CCM is the state's largest nonpartisan organization of municipal leaders representing towns and cities across the state. In fact, almost all of Connecticut's municipalities are members of CCM. In our earlier segment, we were talking with Mr. DeLong about getting up to speed and getting pointed in the right direction from a state budgetary standpoint, having the adult conversation making the necessary cuts with the strength and leadership that's required to see them through. CCM has developed a report entitled Securing the Future Service Sharing and Revenue Diversification for Connecticut Municipalities, which you could check out on their website, ccm-ct.org. And their membership feels strongly that a number of recommendations must be given serious consideration as key components of any final budget package. And to start with, that incorporates cost containment. So, Joe, what are the high points of that initiative?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think, you know, as you mentioned, cost containment, do we really look at this as a three-legged stool? And if you take one of these provisions without doing the other, the whole thing collapses. So it's really a package of recommendations that have to go together. And that's one of the things that I think is so important that we point out from the very beginning of this, because we have some lawmakers who look at this report and they say, well, I really like this part. I want to do this part, but I don't want to do the other parts. And so I think that it's important that we guide this discussion by saying that this is a three-legged stool and each one of these components are important. But the first component that we break down is really cost control or cost containment. Things that can be done at the municipal level to control costs going forward. A lot of that has to do with the areas of pension reform, really getting into making sure that we have pensions that are sustainable. A few years ago at the state level, or several years ago, the state created additional tiers for the state's retirement because they recognized that some of their retirement programs were not going to be sustainable going forward, but they didn't want to grant the authority at the municipal level to do those additional tiers. So we continue to have costs that are driven up in retirement systems that are some of the most robust in the country that really the taxpayer just simply cannot support. So we're asking for some changes there. We're asking for some ability to provide some transparency on the Board of Education side of local budgets. And that's very controversial to some because they think that, that their education costs are sacred. But we're not talking about getting into the classroom. I don't think our municipal leaders want to get into the classroom at all. But what we're talking about is things like the consolidation of back office functions. Does every town really need to have a finance director on both the Board of Education side and the town government side? Mm-hmm. Do they have to have, maintenance officers on each side?
I was going to say, or in the case of districts, perhaps you have three towns that have finance directors and a school district with a fourth.
Yes. Yeah. And it's redundancy to the part of to the direction of insanity in a lot of cases. But what will happen with these Board of Education budgets is they get presented to municipal leaders, and municipal leaders only have the ability to accept or reject the budget as far as the bottom line. Now, they can look at the Board of Education and say, you know what, we think there's a little bit of fat in here and we think there's some areas where things should be consolidated and we want you to come back and reduce this budget by a percent or a percent and a half. What the boards do at that point in time is they typically go and they cut out the most popular program and get all the parents upset, and the parents, run to the town hall and say, we hear that the mayor wants to cut the band.
Yeah.
That was
no
never
more
the
football?
Case.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah. At the same time, you might have an assistant superintendent that has three administrative assistants. And what we're saying is that you have to have three. And by the way, we have one on the town government side that has capacity. Could some of their capacity be used to meet your needs? So not having redundant systems. So
are you talking about some degree of line item authority from the municipal level on Board of Education budgets? Because using the word scrutinize obviously means look carefully at. But are we talking about actual reform that gives some legal wherewithal to non-education leaders to affect the end number?
Yeah, I think that what you're looking at is instead of being able to say we think that the bottom line lines should be reduced by 1% or 1.5%. I think it's the ability to go back and say, hey, in this line item, you know, you've created three new director positions under a very tight budget, and we don't think that's necessary, and we want you to go back and rethink that and come and explain to us why it's necessary to have three new director positions within this line item. So it's really a government transparency issue that I think that our local leaders are looking for, because, you know, the reality is we can't have all of the, we can't afford all of the government that we want. And so we have to make sure that we're addressing these areas of inefficiencies and these areas where we can cooperate either across communities or certainly within a community. And I think, it, you know, as you look at this proposal, we talked about the three-legged stool, that kind of segues into the second part of this, which is the, well, the service sharing. The whole idea of service sharing, you know, the word regionalism in Connecticut has become this bad word, and what does it mean? But not all service sharing is within a region or is across communities.
Right.
Some service sharing is simply between the local government and the Board of Education or other areas. And we're calling for reforms that, I think some of the organized labor doesn't like, but I think are extremely reasonable. I grew up in an organized labor household. I'm not an anti-union person by any stretch. But one of the reforms that we've asked for, which I think is a very simplistic reform, is simply says that if there is more than one bargaining unit involved in a service sharing initiative, whether that's within a community or outside of a community, that a coalition of bargaining units will be put together to represent the interest of everybody. So in other words, everybody who's involved will be represented by one bargaining unit. And the reason for that being, you know, you look at even the city of Hartford. We've heard Mayor Bronin talk about this. People think, again, about regionalism outside of the city. Well, within the city of Hartford, a few years ago, they tried to merge their information technology or their IT departments between the Board of Education and the city government side. Makes perfect sense. Why do you need two different IT departments, you know, within that area? And I think all of the leadership within the city on both sides, the Board of Ed and the city government, agreed. But the problem is the workers are represented by different bargaining units. And the bargaining units can't get along or can't agree on anything. So you have all these service sharing initiatives that seem to make perfect sense, but you get too many spoons in the stew and nothing gets done. So our proposals aren't an attack on collective bargaining in terms of saying get rid of collective bargaining by any stretch. But the proposal on the service sharing side of things is a very simple proposal that just says, look, if you have two or three or four or five bargaining units who are involved representing employees doing the exact same job in the same service sharing function, get together and decide for one bargaining unit, whether it's a coalition or it's a separate bargaining unit altogether, to represent the interest of all of these employees at the bargaining table so we can actually get something done and we can actually consolidate some services. Seems like such a simplistic proposal. There's not a lot of people who really articulate a reason why it shouldn't be done, but it's, you know, it's pulling teeth at the legislative process to get these things to happen.
Sure.
Because
it, and there is some, you know, and there is some degree of political power or cachet that's held by these bargaining units upward to the state level with these representatives too, because some say as the units go, so do the votes.
Sure.
Which is another issue, and
yes,
and harkens back to your call and so many people's calls for true leadership. We've only got about three more minutes with you, Joe, and I don't want to press you into a corner here, but revenue diversification is the third leg of the stool.
That's the third leg of that stool, absolutely.
But that does actually, in reality, seem to have something of a simplistic solution. Give us a few details on that.
What that really comes down to is the fact of not pushing everything at the local level into the property tax. Connecticut is very unique in that regard of everything at the local level. The only way local governments can fund government is through the property tax. Now, you know, most people recognize there's a lot of challenges with that. Our urban centers, if you really want to have growth and development and jobs and people coming into the state and not losing, you know, firms like General Electric and others, you have to have urban centers that can attract youth and a young workforce. You have to have workforce development. Well, when the only way that an urban center can generate money is through the property tax, and then in Hartford, for example, 60% of their property is tax exempt. Mm. There's no longer a way to fund local government or make these areas vibrant. It becomes a downward spiral. Where, you know, my grandmother, when I was a little kid, used to always have this saying, you know, don't put all of your eggs in one basket.
Sure.
You know, that's what we've done in municipal governments. And all we're saying is, once we do the things to control costs, so we're not just giving money away, instead of just raising revenue in one area, let's reduce our reliance in that area, or actually reduce property taxes to make them more competitive, and find areas where our taxes aren't as high as they are in other parts of the region, and grab some capacity there, and it creates balance. I look at it almost like if you have investments, balancing out your portfolio. You know, you don't want to have all of your investments in one stock. Mm. It's the same way with local governments. You want to have balance in the way that you generate revenues to support local governments.
Yeah.
And we have a really hard time having that conversation because everybody says, oh, it's just a tax increase. Well, it's not just a tax increase if it's done the right way. If you have the right cost controls,
right.
It's spreading the pain out in a way that your taxing system becomes more competitive, and you're not doing things to squash small businesses and to squash home ownership and things of that nature.
Mm.
So that's part of the proposal that we're really pushing as well. And again, we don't want it without the cost controls, because if you do it without the cost controls, you bring in new revenues, and those new revenues just get spent.
Right.
And then the property tax doesn't go down. We're in a bigger mess than we're in now.
Mm.
But if you do all three legs of the stool together and you have the cost controls in place and you start diversifying revenues, what you're going to see is some areas where you're going to collect more, but then you're going to see this over-reliant property tax system that's so crushing, you're actually going to see it become more competitive, and those revenues go down, or those collections go down, or those mill rates go down. And right. That's really what we've been advocating for quite some time.
Well, I know my dad used to say, watch out for wanting to be number one, because once you're number one, there's only one direction you can go. But when it comes to being the number one highest taxed state in the nation, I bet there's a million people that are listening to this show that would love to be number two.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, three just or four fighting, or five would fighting, be wonderful.
Fighting for number two.
Yeah, no doubt.
So Joe DeLong is with us. He's director of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, and we always appreciate checking in with this organization working so hard on behalf of the people of the state, the state's largest nonpartisan organization of municipal leaders, representing 164 of Connecticut's 169 member municipalities. And we thank you for being part of the program, Joe. Learned a lot, and hopefully, let's just you know, we're number two. Let's just get that chant going. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, folks on the program know how we like to celebrate grassroots volunteerism, and it doesn't come any better than the discovery of a brand new activity that we are helping to promote for the very first time, with the goal of raising $50,000 to send 50 kids to camp this summer. Our friend Dave Levy, who you may know if you're a patron of Holly Lane Shoes, has founded an organization called Kids for Kids. That's KIDZ number 4, KIDZ, and it's mission is to inspire kids to change the world by using their energy, creativity, and imagination to find ways to fulfill other kids' dreams, which is a beautiful thing. Dave, great to meet you, and thanks for joining us on the program this morning.
John, thanks a lot for having us.
So tell us a little bit about how this started to come together for you.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. My mother called me back in October and asked me to come over to her house, and said she needed me to do something for her. And she talked to me about a story that happened 3 years ago, which was one of our employees had a daughter that at the time was 9 years old, and the home situation was not a very healthy one to be around. And that my mother asked her what her daughter was doing over the summer, and she said nothing, she's staying home. And my mother thought for a second, and then she said she can't stay home. She really needs to be out, and she needs to be at camp. And she couldn't afford to send her daughter to camp. So my mother found the local director of the PF camp, which is in Norwalk, and he's an amazing guy named Dan Sullivan, who's a guidance counselor at Norwalk High School, and sat with him and explained the situation and asked if he had any scholarships in Norwalk. And he said, no, Sandy, I wish we did. And she was there in Dan's office for about 2 hours exchanging life stories. Mm. And they, at the end of 2 hours, Dan said, "Sandy, I want to show you something." And he pulled out a file, and it was all kids that wanted to come to camp that summer and couldn't afford it. Mm. So my mother said, "I need you to start an organization. I want it to be called Kids for Kids. And I want the kids to be involved and driving the raising of money to help other kids, to give them a purpose in their life and really learn how to give back at a young age." And that's how it started. And that was back in October. In November and December, we had a group of kids that raffled off some UGG boots and things like that. And they raised $2,600, which was an amazing start. And a group of four kids did that, doing that at
44,000 to go.
Exactly. So, excuse me. So with that, you know, Kids for Kids has really started. We are having our first annual event. It's going to be a walkathon at Norwalk High School, June 10th from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. And we're encouraging people to really sign up, and they can go online at kids, that's K-I-D-Z, for the number 4, K-I-D-Z.com. And they can sign up either individually, or we're encouraging people to get a group of 10 people with their friends and family, and any team captain that recruits 10 people will get a free pair of UGG boots from Holly Lane Shoes.
Okay, and as this was all coming together, you reached out to an acquaintance, Al DeGuido, of Al's Angels, to maybe get a little moral support?
Well, not only moral support. Al is just a mentor. He's obviously, for those of you who know him, know how amazing he is and how many lives he's touched and what he does. And for those of you that don't, please check out his organization, which is alsangels.org. Al and his family also own Saugatuck Suites. And Al really has given me great guidance and been there to help us every step of the way. And he's a certified 501c3. And we're actually utilizing and partnering with Al to fund the donations through his nonprofit, which he's just been amazing to us.
Right. And that's an important point, Dave, that we do want to reinforce, that while the Kids for Kids is in the process of seeking nonprofit status, all of the donations to this event and all the money raised will be coming under the umbrella of the partner nonprofit. So anything that folks do to help the effort is a tax deductible initiative right off the bat.
Absolutely is.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about the logistics. There's, if I understand correctly, the event in the morning at Norwalk High School is primarily for young people to be involved and show how they're raising money and partnering to sort of walk a mile in the shoes of their counterparts that may not have the opportunity to go to camp. But then there's also a companion event later in the day, right? A concert of some sort?
It is. We're having a Kids for Kids celebration concert, and it's actually also part of Saugatuck Suites and something that Al puts together, which is the Sweet Sounds of Summer, mm-hmm. up on the Fairfield Green by the gazebo. And it's going to be a really fun event. We've got Taylor Felt performing, who is an amazing performer. She lives in Darien, and she's back and forth recording from between Darien and L.A., and mm-hmm. she's an amazing songwriter, too. She's written a lot of original songs. She's going to be performing, as well as some others, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And for all the registered walkers that walk in the walkathon in the morning, Al and Saugatuck Suites is actually going to give everyone that walked a free ice cream during the concert.
Fantastic. Anything else at this point that you want folks to know as the Kids for Kids initiative starts to solidify and moves toward this big event on June 10th?
No, we really are looking for sponsorship and also for people to get involved and sign up for the walk. More people, the better. And, you know, the great thing is that whether you're sponsoring or walking, you know that you're really changing a kid's life for the summer.
Fantastic. So the goal is to raise $50,000 to send 50 kids to camp this summer, and folks can learn all about it and register and learn not only about the morning walk at Norwalk High School, but the evening concert on the Fairfield Green at kidsforkids.com. That's KIDZ4, KIDZ.com. Our guest, Dave Levy, is the brainchild of this whole effort, and I don't doubt that we'll be talking to you around this time every year, Dave, because while this is your first step off in the direction of philanthropy and organization, it sounds like you've got a good thing going, and we hope that it will continue on and help grow, and pretty soon we'll be talking about sending 150 or 250 kids to camp this summer, and that'll be an easy check to write. So we appreciate you involving us with this partnership at this early stage, and look forward to seeing you at these events, and good luck.
John, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
So we heard from Dave what a godsend Al DeGuido has been to this upcoming event, this Kids for Kids extravaganza coming up this weekend. So Al, tell us a little bit about Al's Angels and how you came to know the effort that Dave and the Holly Lane family was putting on.
Sure. Al's Angels is a 501c3 organization that I started over 20 years ago. It was a result of actually being involved with an event in New Jersey that I had no idea kind of the purpose of until I attended. It wound up to be a group of parents and families who were trying to raise money for their children and for other families that where children were dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. This is 20-plus years ago. Mm-hmm. And these people had virtually been wiped out financially and had no means of providing food and clothing and gifts for the holiday season. And I was just blown away by that whole experience. And that night went home and woke up my wife and said, listen, we got to start to do something. And she said, well, you know, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. We just want to start raising money to help these families. And I said, I can't believe in the United States of America that children that are battling cancer, their parents have to stand in front of strangers and beg for money, for food and for clothing and for gifts for the holidays. So that was 20-plus years ago. This past year, we helped over 3,200 families in the tri-state area have their Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Hanukkah meals. We helped over 12,000 children in the tri-state area that were looking for gifts for the holiday season, whether that was Hanukkah or Christmas. So none of that gets done without an incredible army of angels and people who are simpatico with the mission and the passion that we have to help many more children who are battling cancer and rare blood diseases. In terms of Dave and the Holy Land family, he is one of my angels, and was connected with another angel and just reached out and said, hey, listen, we're trying to do something nice for these children that are in desperate need, that need a break. They need an opportunity to kind of experience the same joy that a lot of children out there in the summer months experience in terms of going to camp. And I have a very soft spot in my heart for children and causes that are very sincere. And I wanted to get involved immediately and see what we could do to help. And that's where this whole Kids for Kids effort and concert all started in Dave's kitchen discussing ideas.
Excellent. Well, without you, folks would not be able to both attend or donate and support the Kids for Kids initiative and at the same time be able to utilize it as a tax-deductible donation. Lent your 501c3 to the effort as a pass-through so that the tax deductible component of this whole thing can work. And that is an incentive in these hard times for a lot of people. So I dare say, aside from the hundreds and hundreds of families you've helped over the years who have been faced with tragic situations, you're going to be able to help take 50 or more kids out of the tragedy of a summer on the streets and give them an opportunity to go to camp. So we thank you boy, you are an angel, Al. We appreciate everything that you do. And I hope you'll come back on the show so we could do a whole segment and maybe even talk to a couple of the families that you've helped in the future.
Yeah, no problem. I would love to do that. And I just commend everyone who's going to make a donation and participate in this event. I think that we all have to realize this is part of our responsibility as members of the human family to help those that are in desperate need. So I thank you and thank of Dave and the entire Holy Land family for stepping up to do this work.
Great. And once again, if you're just tuning in, coming up on June 10th from 9 to 12, it's the Kids for Kids event. The aim is to raise $50,000 to send 50 or more kids to camp this summer and inspire kids to change the world by using their creativity, energy, and imagination to find ways to fund and fulfill other kids' dreams, hence Kids for Kids. So this first annual walk-a-thon, Walk a Mile in Their Shoes, is going to be held at Norwalk High School on June 10th from 9 to 12, and then a benefit concert featuring Dennis and Sharon Collins and Taylor Felt from 7 to 9 o'clock at the Fairfield Green in conjunction with Saugatuck Suites and Al's Angels. So we hope everybody can come out. We want to thank you again, Al DeGuido, for your role, as well as Dave Levy and the Holly Lane family. And we hope that we'll be back with you every year as this event grows. And maybe sooner or later, we'll be talking about sending 500 kids to camp, thanks to Kids for Kids. So thank you, Al. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voket@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voket, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.